Chapter 63. "General, I need to speak with you." Liv Danavis had found her father on the roof of the Travertine Palace. Checklists and reports spread all over a table. It wasn't yet dawn, and he was bundled against the chill of the morning. He was standing, ignoring his work for the moment, his butt against the edge of his table, looking toward the east.
"General, this morning, not father. I must be in trouble," he said. The corners of his mouth twitched. "Come here."
She came to his side and he pulled her close so they could watch the sun rise together.
"Moments of beauty sustain us through hours of ugliness," her father said.
She watched him as he watched the sun rise. His blue eyes, outside the red halo, of course, looked tired. Corvin Danavis had always had the capacity to survive on less sleep than anyone Liv knew, so she knew it wasn't the early hour that had him weary. It wasn't the first time she'd seen this look on his face, but she thought it might be the first time she understood it. All those times she'd seen this look, pinching his eyes and squeezing the joy out of her usually jovial father, he was reliving battles. Today he was preparing to see more men die, and fighting for the very man who'd killed his people in the past, Gavin Gile. It must be tearing him apart. The sun rose in magnificent pinks and oranges, mirrored in the waves, and slowly the tension leaked out of her father's eyes. She could see the freckles under his caramel skin around his eyes, and the faint red highlights in his hair were set afire by the sunlight. She'd inherited neither, nor the blue eyes that would have helped her be a more powerful drafter. Corvin's lips moved faintly, mouthing words. Oh, he was praying, she realized. Finished, he made the triangle, splaying three fingers, touching his thumb to his right eye, his middle finger to his left eye, and his forefinger to his forehead, the spiritual eye. He completed the gesture by touching mouth, heart, and hands. The three and the four, the perfect seven, sealed to Orholam. What you behold, what you believe, how you behave. He didn't turn from the risen sun.
"You came to demand how I can fight for my old enemy," he said.
"He killed Mother." Liv's voice was icy.
"No, Oliviana, he didn't.
His people did, same thing.
The situation is more complicated than you realize."
"What's that supposed to mean? Don't treat me like I'm a child."
"I'm sorry, Oliviana, I have to protect—"
"I'm 17. I've been surviving without your protection for 3 years. You don't have to protect me anymore."
"Not protecting you," Corvin said. "Protecting others from you."
What? It hit Liv like a shot in the stomach. Her father didn't trust her.
"You know who was 17 when he upended the world?"
Corvin asked.
"Dazen Gile."
But not even close to the same thing.
"Oliviana, I'm asking you to trust me. I've seen fathers who abuse their position and demand slavish obedience of their children. I've never done that with you, have I? When you wanted to go to the Chromeria, and I didn't want you to go, when I told you that I could teach you everything about drafting you needed to know, what happened?"
"You let me go. Eventually."
"And it was awful for you there, but you showed me how strong you are, and here you stand. I'm proud of you, Oliviana. You swam with sea demons and survived. But I'm asking you to trust me on this. I'm doing the right thing. I promise. I haven't forgotten your mother. I haven't forgotten you."
She couldn't maintain the eye contact or her righteous indignation in the face of her father's open, honest refusal to be more open and honest. He was standing on his record, and more than anyone, she knew that his record was unimpeachable. She also knew that he wouldn't be moved once he made a decision like this. If she was stubborn, she'd come by it honestly. She gave in. It was so much easier to admire him when he wasn't making war in our country. I mean, I didn't even think about the war when I was around him.
"A little infatuated,"
her father suggested. A flush crawled up her cheeks. "Maybe a little," she grumbled.
"I'd wonder if you weren't. He is what he is," Corvin said, shrugging.
"He really isn't responsible for Mother's death?" Liv asked, feeling weak.
"Responsible? That's tricky," If the Giles hadn't gone to war, would your mother still be alive?
Probably.
But I can tell you two things. Gavin didn't order or desire your mother's death in any way, and he is utterly and forever besotted with one woman, and that's not you.
That's three things, isn't it? Liv asked, shooting her father a grin. He grinned back.
You get one free for being my daughter.
What's he doing here? The prison's men burned this city, killed tens of thousands. He's showed no interest in Garriston since then, so what does he want now? Like, it didn't matter when no one wanted it, but now that someone does, he can't lose it?
There weren't two Guile brothers. There were three. The youngest one, Sebastian, was murdered by a blue-white when Gavin was about 13. Gavin's first purpose is to protect the innocent from colour whites, or if you want to look at it uncharitably, to kill colour whites whenever he finds them. King Haradul is using colour whites, or at least the prison believes he is, so he must be stopped.
A blue-white? That doesn't make sense. Blues aren't rational, are they?
Liv, people talk about breaking the halo like you go instantly mad, like it's as clean a separation as between living and dying. It's not. Some colour whites hold on to something like sanity for weeks, or even months. Some are fine during the night, but in light they're fully in the grip of their colour. The madness is different every time. A blue can go into a murderous rage. A red can seem calm and philosophical. It's why they're so dangerous. Now, are you going to help me?
Fine, what can I do? She asked.
Do you know how to make Luxin Grenados?
What? No.
What are they teaching you dims at the Chromeria these days?
Hey!
Corvin smiled.
You have your specs?
Of course, Liv said.
Good. I could use a yellow.
I'm not a very good yellow. I mean, I can't make a solid bright water.
That's not what I need, Corvin said. Do you know what happens when you mix red and liquid yellow, seal it airtight in a blue shell, and then shatter it against something?
Something good? Liv asked.
Boom, Corvin said. You could use superviolet for the shell too, but it makes throwers nervous.
Picking up an explosive when you couldn't see whether the shell was intact? Liv could see how that might make someone nervous. Corvin tossed her a blue Luxin ball. She caught it and was surprised that it rattled. She looked closer. The ball had round shot inside it, like small musket balls. For some reason, it stunned her.
Those are what make grenades kill. That's what we're doing, Oliviana. We're killing people, right here, right now. We're using Orholm's gift to kill Orholm's children, most of whom are fools who could be our friends at any other time. It's a hard world. You want me to lie about it? You want to be protected after all?
Liv felt the blood drain out of her. Her father's words were a sponge, sucking up her illusions, blotting up the thin joy she'd gotten from being in his presence again, entrusting someone to make her decisions for her. Something snapped.
Father, I can't do this, she said. I can't kill Tyrians, not for the Chromeria, not just because you say so.
For a moment she saw keen sorrow in her father's eyes. He looked, for the first time she'd ever seen in her whole life, old, haggard.
Liv,
he paused.
At some point you have to decide not merely what you're going to believe, but how you're going to believe. Are you going to believe in people, or in ideas, or in Orholm? With your heart or with your head? Will you believe what's in front of you, or in what you think you know? There are some things you think you know that are lies. I can't tell you what those are, and I'm sorry for that.
It seemed to Liv that this was his long way of explaining fealty to one.
What did you choose, Father? Ideas or men? Liv asked.
Though she had just seen him praying, she knew her father wasn't very religious. That part of him had died with her mother. His prayer had likely been something along the lines of, "Well done, sir, this is a beautiful sunset." Her father rejected the idea that Orholm actually cared about individual men or women, or nations for that matter. She saw him blink. His mouth opened, closed rapidly, set in a line, eyes pained.
"I can't say," he said finally.
"Can't say because you never actually made the choice?
How can you lecture me, then?"
But that didn't make sense.
Her father was the best man she knew. No, that wasn't it. Her father had lived his life because he believed in certain ideas. That was what had led him to fight against Gavin Gile, to give up everything in that fight. He'd been a man of ideals. Those ideals were what had made him stay away from the Chromaria himself, what had made him oppose his daughter going to the Chromaria. He'd been afraid that she would be corrupted by the Chromaria's lack of ideals. A wise fear, as it turned out, Liv thought guiltily. She had been corrupted. She had agreed to spy on Gavin. She was just as bad as everyone else at the Chromaria. But that didn't explain why her father was suddenly fighting for the man he should hate. The ideals hadn't changed. If anything, Gavin being here, fighting Tyrians, should have made her father fight him all the more fiercely. Or Hollum. Maybe her father had been corrupted too. Maybe he'd been bought. Maybe he'd sold out his ideals just like everyone else. Her heart hurt at the very thought. But why else wouldn't he tell her the answer to what was an obvious question? Because it would make his hypocrisy undeniable. The whole swiving Chromaria was corrupt. It defiled everything it touched. Liv had been at the bottom. She'd seen how monochromes were treated. She'd seen how Tyrians were treated. And she'd become part of the power too. She'd become almost a friend to the Prism himself. And she'd loved it. Loved talking with a powerful man, basking in his attention. She'd loved the beautiful dresses and being treated as special and worth attention. And to keep her power, she'd sold herself. So easily. So easily. But that was how things worked at the Chromaria. It had even corrupted her father.
Liv, her father said, Liv, trust me. I know it's hard, but please.
Trust you? When you won't trust me? She asked, pained.
Livy, please, I love you. You know I wouldn't do anything to hurt you.
And then it all became clear, and it took Liv's breath away. How could the Prism get her father to betray everything he held dear? Why would her father evade simple questions? Because he loved her. Corvin had been corrupted, but not by money, or power, or sex. She knew he wouldn't sell his soul so cheaply. So what did the Prism have over Corvin? He had Liv. Gavin Gile was using Liv to suborn her father. She didn't know what exactly the threat and the bribe had been, but it didn't matter. Liv was being bribed and threatened exactly the same way, but by the Hrothgari. She knew how the game was played now. She had betrayed her principles because she loved Vina. Her father was betraying his principles because he loved Liv. Corvin had chosen that his fealty would be to his family only. That meant Liv. And it meant he couldn't tell her, because if he told her, she'd ruin it and make his sacrifices worthless. Liv's heart broke. She had to clamp down hard on her emotions to keep from bursting into tears. Cruel. So cruel. How could Gavin do such a thing and then smile at her? Because that's how the Chromaria is. Vipers and villains, all of them. And Corvin had done everything he could to try to keep Liv out of the Chromaria, everything short of ordering her not to go because he wasn't so imperious. It was her fault. Liv swallowed the sudden lump in her throat. Her father had been debased because of her. He deserved better than for her to expose his shame. She smiled as bravely as she could, pretending to acquiesce.
I understand, Father. I do trust you. Just tell me everything when you can. Fair enough?
Fair enough, Corvin said, his relief obvious. I love you, Livy.
I know you do, Father.
And Gavin Gile was going to pay for turning that love against him.